Welcome to Earth Unearthed. We are your hosts, Akash and Ruchir.
Earth Unearthed is a fortnightly podcast where we deconstruct themes from movies and TV shows to discuss the economics, politics, and science behind it.
In this episode, we sit down with Israr Hassan to discuss the Netflix movie Extraction, which came out earlier this year. We deconstruct a variety of things, starting from Edward Said's conception of Orientalism, yellow filtering in Hollywood movies, and then moving on to discuss private mercenaries and the case for drug legalization. This is the second of the three parts of this episode. Here we talk about the history of mercenaries for hire, and if at all, Extraction's portrayal of private mercenaries is realistic. If you want to listen to us talk about the economics of drug legalization and history of prohibition, you can skip to the third part.
Welcome to Dhaka.
Okay, so now let's basically talk about something that struck Ruchir a lot, I think it's something which is, you know, very, very important part of the whole story of Extraction, and it's at the foreground, the private mercenaries part, because Tyler Reck is a private mercenary. So, Ruchir, what do you think of the whole thing in the movie first, and then why don't you tell us more about private mercenaries, because you seem to be knowing much more about it than either of us.
Yes, Akash, it's one of my areas of interest. So to give some background, so in the movie, the Indian drug lord, O.V. Majan Sr. hires, actually it was Saju Rai who hires a black market mercenary group for, you know, rescuing the son of the drug lord, O.V. Majan. So we see that the mercenary group here is actually a black market mercenary group, they're not the standard private mercenary groups. But it's interesting to know what mercenary groups generally are. So here the protagonist of the movie was Tyler Rake. He is a former member of the SASR, which is the Special Air Service Regiment of Australia, which is modeled around the very, very, very famous Special Air Service Regiment of England. So those of you listening, if you play any first person shooter game, you must have heard the term. And for those of you who are really interested in history, so the Special Air Service became very famous. It's a secret group, and it's very, very... It's one of the most elite groups in the United Kingdom and became very famous during the 1980s after the Iranian embassy siege in exactly 1980, I think. And it was probably the first siege worldwide which was broadcast on television. And we were able to see the outcome of that and to see how well they are trained. So coming back to the question of private mercenaries, in the movie, as I mentioned before, that the mercenary group involved in as part of the movie is a black market mercenary group. So generally black market mercenary groups operate in the dark, and they're illegal, and they generally work through blockchain softwares and the dark web, and that's how they generally get their clients. But in general, any kind of a mercenary group, so there's a difference between mercenary group and people for hire. So mercenary group, So mercenary groups are a totally different elite class. Okay, that's what the most readers and everything that is there in the literature says. So mercenaries are generally ex-members of the armed forces, of the special op divisions of the armed forces and law enforcement, and they have a much higher level of expertise, training, and are also equipped way better than guns for hire.
Yeah, so basically the history of mercenaries, basically, Richard, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's no comparison to the modern mercenaries, but mercenaries, essentially what it means is that people who fight for money, people who don't fight for a personal cause, but for money. So we see in history, even if we go back in history, we see that a lot of kingdoms, when they were not able to get very enthusiastic people in their army, they used to hire mercenaries. We see that even many Greek mercenaries fought for the Persian Empire during the early classic era. And we see that in India as well. We see many Indian kingdoms also hiring mercenaries. Even Byzantine emperors followed that. But why don't you tell us more about the the evolution of you know, the mercenary stuff that we see currently in use.
Yes, so as you mentioned, mercenaries are basically just there for there for the money. They're only there for the private gain, and they're not politically motivated, and they're not related to a nation state as such. To add to your point, like even in the olden days, kings and most kingdoms and empires, you used to take the services of mercenaries for very, very special operations where the army was probably not as effective or where they did not want to get involved directly. So coming to modern times, I guess a lot of us must have heard about the firm Blackwater. It's one of the most infamous mercenary groups, and they belong to the category what are called the private military contractors, which is just a more official name for a legal mercenary group. So private military contractors have now become very, very popular. I mean, even in the beginning, even the United Nations was had strong criticism towards the idea of a private of hiring the services of a private mercenary group. But nowadays, even the United Kingdom the United Nations have hired the services of PMCs for their peacekeeping forces to, you know, reduce the number of peacekeeping forces they have to employ themselves. So, and there are lots of reasons why countries prefer private mercenary contractors. First of all, they're said to be much more effective given their training. So the average amount a country's army spends on its soldier is very, very high. Though the salary they receive may not be that high, but the resources that a country spends on their armed forces and especially the special operations group of their services are really high. And to outsource it to a private military contractor is really cheap. And they actually are people with the same level of training, perhaps who served in those divisions before. So it's definitely a cheap alternative. But there's also kind of a restriction in where in the use that the most government states and even the private businesses employ for private military contractors. They are generally avoided in war zones, and they do not have the legal authority to take offensive moves, like basically, you know, fire the first bullet as such. Under the Geneva Convention, private military contractors are kind of exempted from the Geneva Convention. So basically, they'll not have the right that a soldier has if they get caught, and they will not get the status of prisoners of war as well. Most governments and states use them for not very direct military war operations. So generally, commonly we've seen, for example, in Middle East or war zones in Africa, that they're used for outsourcing facility guarding, strategic installations, a lot of times in trainings, because they are comprised of servicemen of elite army divisions across the world. And of course, black op kind of a thing, we don't really know what the scenario is, but it has been stated a lot of times that the United States government has employed the use of private military contractors even in black op operations and offensive maneuvers. I mentioned before the group called the Blackwater, which is pretty infamous, and they gained notoriety due to the large number of Iraqi civilian deaths they caused during the mid-2000s. And they had to change their name a lot of times because of the hate they get.
So mercenaries, despite the fact that a lot of mercenaries are used in developed countries as well, in the US to be very specific, but in this particular context, in the case of a kidnapping, I think it's very hypothetical to start with that a mercenary is being used. But more than that, we can't imagine mercenaries being used in a kidnapping case in a country like US. What do you think, Richard?
Yes, Akash, I think you're very right over there. Firstly, I would like to say that in case of a kidnapping or any such thing, even if hypothetically we say that there's some kind of a rescue operation by a mercenary group who's given this contract by some businessman or some crime lord, the mercenary group will have to be probably a black market group. There's no chance that you can hire private military contractors here, because at the end of the day, even they, they'll only work when it is legal for them to be there. I'm pretty sure that the mercenaries in the movie were not there legally. And I mean, even then, in that case, the idea is far-fetched. So you'd rather, I mean, if one can imagine that they'd rather use a local mercenary group than hire a foreign mercenaries to do such kind of an operation.
And hire a white mercenary. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And this is very far-fetched.
Yeah, that seems hypothetical. Because, see, mercenaries in the subcontinent, I think they're hired for such purposes, for basically kidnapping people or even getting somebody who is kidnapped back. But it's more often than not, it's a local mercenary group. And course, it's not something which is legal. It's something extra legal.
Yes, they have to be black market groups, definitely.
Yeah, but when the rule of law in the whole country is, so substandard, then the use of mercenary groups for such purposes is high, and more often than not, they are...
And that is exactly the reason even governments employ private mercenary contractors, because you'll generally find them in countries where the rule of law is substandard and there's a higher risk of attacks and casualties, and to reduce costs, it's more sensible for them to outsource the protection. But when it comes to black market groups, I really doubt that. Again, as you said, there's unlikely that a foreign mercenary group would be involved in an operation in a developed country. Even if they are involved, though, they're less likely to send in a white man to do the job.
And that too, openly shooting someone isn't something.
Yes, and also importing a helicopter, like somehow getting their own helicopter there and flying over the capital city.
Yeah, because the idea of a mercenary, for example, whatever conspiracy theories might actually have, is that mercenaries are supposed to be working, from a distance, right? They're not supposed to be out in the open and whatnot.
Yes.
And that exactly is seen as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's funny because, for example, you guys watched American Sniper, right? Which is another controversy.
Yes.
Yeah. So the guy, he shoots from a distance, right? He's from
Chris Kyle, I remember.
Yeah, Chris Kyle as well.
A very basic question that arises from this: how do drug cartels actually get so powerful? And in a broader picture, the problem of having drugs criminalized, right? So, I mean, there was a very famous quote by Milton Friedman on this. So yes, so the thing is, mass arrests of local growers of drugs, for example, not only increase the price of local drugs, but they also lessen the competition. And then only major players like that can handle the massive shipments, have their own fleet of aircraft, troops to defend caravan, and have proper methods of eluding the law enforcement, such as lawyers and all, can survive the war against drugs and the free market by the government. So to think of it, it's just because it's prohibited, So if you look at the drug war from a purely economic point of view, the role of the government is just to, in fact, protect the drug cartel. That's literally true. And that's how they grow so big and so powerful at the end of the day.
If you liked the conversation so far, you could listen to the third part of this conversation, which is my personal favorite. In this part, we talk about the economics of drug legalization and the history of prohibition.